Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Tonight, we go to the attic to look at more samplers. This will be the fourth in our series of sampler shows on Wednesday night. So I'll be at the attic with Gene Lee and have already been there and scoped out what we're going to talk about. So we have a nice, well, we have probably 2 hours that we're going to cram into an hour and 15 minutes is what we have.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun. So we'll have Gene, who knows a thing or two about samplers, and we got a rack of them to go through, and it'll be fun. So join us at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on the YouTube channel, and we'll be at the attic live for more samplers. Now, that'll be the last one in the series, the last one of the sampler thing. So don't miss that. And if you missed last week with Vicki Jennett, go back and listen to that. Oh, she hit it out of the park. She was fantastic.
She was.
Yeah, she really was. What she knows is amazing. So do that. Join us Wednesday night. And I just found out, this was completely unknown to me. Marga has a friend out here in the Phoenix area, and she had lunch with her the other day. And I must have come up in some way. Well, turns out this lady doesn't do any needlework, but has a small collection of samplers that she's gotten from estate sales and other things. So why spend money on it? Well, because she appreciates the needlework and doesn't want it thrown away.
That's great.
So she's collected these. So sometime while we're out here, I get to go see those. So I'll do a little video if I can. If she doesn't mind, I'll do a little video or something. But, yeah, she has no interest in stitching or anything. So, but, yeah, just couldn't, one of those, I can't let it go in the trash. So I'm buying.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, not going to Goodwill, yeah. So I'm anxious to see what she has. Yeah, because that could range from a spectacular little gold mine to a bunch of ratty, holy samplers. But I got to believe from what Marga said that she has a nice one, so we'll see.
Yeah, one of the things that impressed me about Vicki's collection is that, she showed the tatty damage samplers.
Yeah.
Where I'm sure, a lot of people that collect samplers don't want any part of that. They want samplers that look nice, that they can hang on the wall, and she's getting them to study them and, do her best to reproduce them if she can and to preserve them. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. People who get those that have a hole or two in them, that's some character. And then, usually they're able to figure out what should have gone there anyway. And,
mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. And I think you learn things. I'm sure Vicki even has said it a couple of times. You learn things if there's a hole, was it a thread that rotted or,
right.
What little tidbits you can pick up out of that. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have a problem at all with those. I have a little hole here and there. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
And she had a couple that were unfinished, which I also think is interesting.
Yeah.
Why not?
And it's amazing that those things have survived so long.
Isn't it? Yep.
When they're unfinished or when they're damaged, you'd think somebody would just look at it and say, "Oh, this is trash," And I can't imagine how many things have been.
Yeah.
Tossed like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an untold number of them.
Yep. Oh yeah, and historically, but even today, how many needleworkers when they pass on, their families just mm-hmm. take all that stuff and just throw it in the trash.
Yeah.
How much needlework, there should be some way of some network for saving that stuff or protecting it. But then at some point, everybody goes, "I don't need more stash."
Well, right. And just even downsizing, my mom is going to be doing that probably sometime soon. And she has more stuff that she can hang on her walls now anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I, you know, I've got more stuff than I can hang on my walls too. So I don't want to take all of her things. And
right.
nobody else in my family wants all of them. You know, they might want one or two pieces. But I was talking with somebody about that the other day, and they commented that the University of Iowa has a woman's studies. I can't remember what it's called. I did know about it. It's an archive
mm-hmm.
where they will accept things, I don't know what kind of things or how much, from Iowa women.
Oh, okay.
So I need to look into that and see what kind of, but again, you know, we're talking, I don't know, a couple dozen, maybe three dozen pieces altogether.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to take all that.
No.
So I don't know, you know, and I know that a lot of what happens is, because I see this on Facebook pages, you know, somebody says, oh, I found a whatever at Goodwill, and I took it out of the frame, and whether it was needlework or a painting or whatever, and I'm using the frame for my project.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what happens to things that wind up at Goodwill. People right. throw the whatever's in the frame away, and they use the frame for their own purposes.
Yeah. Now, it's a real issue, because our kids don't want the stuff.
Right.
You know, I don't know if as you get older you start to have more of an appreciation, but I know that like little teacups and things that, you know, little vases and stuff that Marg has kept from family members through the years, our kids don't want them. They don't.
Yeah.
They had no interest in that stuff. And so what do you do with it? You know, but it's, you know, it's bone china, it's gold edged, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's all those things. And you just can't throw that stuff away. But then, yeah. And at some point, how much of that stuff can you collect as any one person? And
right.
Yeah. It just gets to be too much. I mean, I looked at when my aunt died and we cleaned out her house, my uncle's brother was the estate, whatever that's called, whoever handles the estate. I forget the
name. Executor.
Executor, thank you. And my aunt was a collector of all kinds of things. And she had a couple of china cabinets just full of stuff, beautiful stuff. You know, I mean, she never bought anything cheap. Everything was top
right.
of the line. And so we were there, and Marga had several things that she wanted to take because, number one, they were from my aunt, and number two, she knew that they were not just play toy things, teacups
right.
and, you know, little plates and stuff like that. And my uncle's brother, the executor, he said, no, he says, you can take a few of these things, but, you know, I'm obligated to sell this stuff. And, you know, okay, appreciate your position, but this stuff is not going to sell. And that's exactly what happened. So this massive collection of figurines and all kinds of things went to the auction, and basically it was the end of the day, who will take this bucket full of stuff for a buck kind of thing.
Mm.
And, you know, so it all went to wherever.
And then the thing is that, you know, whoever purchased that is going to resell it.
Yes.
And make quite a bit of money on it.
Yes. Yeah, because he or she knows the right people with the right amount of money. Yep.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Or they'll put it on Etsy or eBay or, you know, whatever. But that's not something you can do in a hurry.
No. No.
You know, that stuff takes a while to move. I have a friend who is a button collector.
Oh.
And she's getting older, and she doesn't have kids, and nobody else in the family is interested in buttons. So she's been selling her buttons on Etsy.
Mm-hmm.
For quite some time, and she's sold a lot of buttons. She's still got a lot left, but you know, she posts some, you know, she photographs them nicely and puts them out there, and people buy them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. If you
but
have
when
the...
you're reducing an estate, you don't have time to do that.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's like I said, we appreciated his position. You know, he needs to empty the house, get it on the market. Get what he can for the the belongings in the house and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's got to execute the estate and get it over with. And we comment every now and then, oh man, there was a couple of those things we really wish we'd been able to keep. But can't do it. But then, then we're the end of the line.
Right.
Yeah. Because our daughter, no thank you. I guarantee you, no thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I think about that, my needlework and collection of stuff I have, and we all have it. What's going to happen to it? And, dumping it on the local EGA or ANG chapter is an option, but at some point, all those members can only take in so much stuff, too. And
right.
And it.
Yeah, our local EGA chapter has a garage sale every other year.
Uh-huh.
And most of what they sell probably goes to other chapter members, but they try to advertise it, And so I think there's probably other people that come to it.
Yeah.
I quit going to it because I don't need to add to my stash any more than I already am.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I provided stuff for them to sell, and it's a great fundraiser for the chapter.
Yeah.
But I got plenty of stuff. Thanks very much.
Yep. Yeah. And so, as you get older, you want to have less and less. I know when we moved, it was a lot of work, but very cathartic in that we got rid of a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we just unloaded stuff. And some of it we sold, and a lot of it was, what have we been keeping this for all these years? And now the focus is in our new place, we have the space to accumulate more stuff, but no, we're disciplining ourselves. We are not going to get in that position again where we have closets with stuff and a crawl space. The crawl space was ugly. But, you discipline yourself because that all you're doing is dumping it on your kids to deal with.
Right. And then when you've lived in a place for a long time, you accumulate stuff without really even realizing
it. Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, that's like that day I spent in the crawl space. I'm hauling out stuff that I completely forgot we had. And what are we doing? Get this stuff out of here. Throw it away. And, And you do. And it's the old constant adjustment. You don't realize how many things you accumulate. And then one day you step back and go, wait a minute, this got way out of control. Yeah.
Yeah, or you buy something and you use it and then you put it away. And a couple of years later, you need it again, but you don't remember where you put it. And you can't remember, if you really did buy it. So you go buy another one. And
Yep.
And it might not be very expensive, so it's no big deal to buy another one. But pretty soon, before you know it, you've got, 20 pairs of scissors.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can only use one at a time.
Yeah, last I checked, that was, unless you're highly skilled, that's one at a time is pretty much it. No, I look at that, when I have, four pairs of really nice needlework scissors. What? For what? What am I doing? But, I'd really like to have that one, so I bought it. They all sit, but I only can pick up one at a time. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. First world problems, I guess.
Definitely.
Yep. So, so we're at the attic. Now, then on the 12th, if you're a male type person in the Phoenix area, October 12 at 6:00, we'll be at the attic for men's night. So no girls allowed other than Jean Lee, because it's her store. So men's night, 6:00, October 12. But please call Jean at the attic and let her know you're coming, because with COVID, I was just over there the other day, with COVID, her multiple tables for people to come and stitch all day Thursdays, she's now using to display things, because the people can't come and stitch. So the space has shifted around a little bit in these days of COVID time. And so space is limited. So let her know that you want to come to get on the list for men's night. And last time I think we had 6 of us. So that was pretty good. And that's not a broad, we're not doing a show, we're not broadcasting, it's just us guys getting together and basically doing what women do, only from the guy's perspective.
Do they do that when you're not there?
No, they haven't, no. No, the last time we did it was the first time. And then Marg and I were going to be out for another trip out here. And so we're getting ready to do it, and then that was the COVID hit, and we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And so this is the first time that we've been able to come out since that first one. And so, you know, immediately, and all the guys had written to me in one way or another saying, I hope we can do it again, because we did. We had a great time. And I hope people are here. There was one guy from Ohio, and he happened to be out here visiting friends or something, so he won't be able to join us. But the rest of them all live in the area, so I'm hoping. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think that they'd like to would want to do that on a regular basis once things settle down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the trouble. Yeah. So anyway, we'll see. I had hoped maybe they would keep doing it, but they didn't. So we're gonna. Going to initiate it. So that's the 12th.
Cool.
And then now write this one down. Everybody write this one down. October 17, 2 o'clock Eastern time on the YouTube channel. The usual Sunday shows are 2 o'clock Eastern time. We're going to be at the attic, and we're going to do shopping at the attic. So Gene and I are going to do, we're going to do a live show. Gene and I are going to do a live show. And it's going to be, what is that, QVS? Is that what it is? Where you buy jewelry
mm-hmm.
and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be kind of like that, uh-huh. only we don't have an army of people to handle phone calls. But, yeah. So what Jean is putting together is, for instance, she might have 5 kits of this, or 10 kits of this. Or 10 cuts of this linen in 40 count, and whatever, you know, whatever the price, a discount of, you know, X percent or whatever. So she's putting together a whole bunch of these things because we're going to do a 2-hour show, and so you'll be able to see. We're going to put them on the. We'll talk about them, hold them up, you know, do just like on the TV show as well. Not just like. Because we don't have the stage and everything, but you know the same concept, and so you'll be able to call in and buy these things, and discount price. I'm saying discount price. I'm you know that's what we talked about, but that's Gene's business. I that's
sure.
not my gig. I'm just there to have the fun and do it. But I'm assuming, yes, there'll be discounts. But anyway, so there'll be, you know, here are 5 kits from, say, last month's sampler of the month at 10% off. I'm just using this as an example. Don't hold me to these things. And when they're gone, they're gone. So call in now and order. And then we'll have 2 or 3 people who will keep track of things. And we'll do the best we can. And please be patient and... I hope we're busy and it's hard to get in with a phone call. Keep trying, you know. It's all we can do. We want to do it. We think we can have some fun with it, and we think we can offer a lot of needlework stuff and save you a little money. So we're going to give it a whirl. So be patient with us. But that's the 17th at 2 o'clock for 2 hours. 2 o'clock Eastern time for 2 hours, and. Yeah, when Jean and I talked through it the other day, she's got a whole list of things already and was working on more. So there'll be plenty of things for people to pick up and be able to order. So it'll be one of those things when you call in, have your credit card ready so you can place your order and get off the phone so the next person can get in. I think it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. It'll probably get a little crazy, but I think it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it, yeah. Got to try, you know, you just got to try
sure.
something like that.
Right.
So, yep. So, so it'll be kits, charts, linen, threads. I don't know whatever else Gene is putting together, but plenty of stuff over 2 hours, and then we'll just have some fun talking about it and taking orders and so on and so forth. And we'll set it up so that you can join us like any live show and comment and ask questions. But you can't. We're not going to have orders coming in through the live show because that'll just make a mess of things. All the orders are going to have to be through the phone, and certainly not through email. Oh, geez, I can't even imagine what that would be like. So it's just going to have to be phone calls with credit card in hand orders, and but we'll still have a live audience where you'll be able to comment and ask questions. So, yeah.
Fun.
We may have bitten off more than we can chew, but why not?
Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
That's
right.
That's right. Yep. So mark that down. That'll be fun. And then also be sure and watch the videos I did at the Needlework Galleria. A lot of fun there. Get to see some new designs from people or designs that people have had. I don't know. Anyway, there's 14 of them, I think. 14 videos. One is a blast where I went into the stitching room and talked with the ladies and looked at what they were stitching. That was so much fun. I wish I'd had time to go back and do another one. But yeah, definitely check that out. And there's one, you know, I almost cried. There was this lady, it's in the video, and she had this big sampler piece with a lot of dense stitching that she was down to the over one verse. And, you know, what do I know? I walk up, oh, wow, look at that. You're almost done. And she says, I have to be honest that I did not stitch all of this. A friend of hers had stitched half of it or so and then died. And, and she was finishing it. For her friend and for herself as a memory. And you just stop and you know, it's mixed emotions like, oh, that's so sad, but it's so fantastic that she's able to do that. And,
right.
You know, and then she's going to be able to put that on her wall and remember her friend. Yeah, that was really cool. But yeah, almost lost it there for that one. Yeah.
So master enabler. I saw several things I was interested in. I haven't bought anything yet, but I will. So what did you come away with? Did you buy anything?
Yeah, I bought stuff. Yeah.
You're darn right I did. Did I even need to ask?
I bought two pieces of banding from Susan Greening Davis. And
oh, my gosh. She had such a great collection.
I just have to tell you, I bought two pieces and made myself leave. Okay? Get out of here. Because, she had rolls and rolls of that stuff. It's like, get out of here right now before $200 is left behind with banding. I mean, just get out. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, that was tough because I wanted more. I wanted more. So I did that. I bought... from Erica Michaels, from Linda Stoltz, I bought a berries chart, the Bristol berries sampler chart. I really like those. And then she has this little piece that she stitched on gauze that is the various names for Christ.
Yeah.
I love that piece, and why I hadn't bought it before, I don't know, but I saw it again. She had the model there, and I want one. I want a copy right now. Because that one, the reason I like it anyway, but a long time ago, there was a church bulletin for, I don't know, Easter, Christmas, I don't know what it was, that was very similar to that, and I kept it. Because you could tell that it would be very easy to chart. And I still have it. It's probably 20 years old now, maybe 30 years old. And I kept it because I was always going to chart it. And what she did is very similar, so this way I didn't have to chart it. But you know what stopped me on that here? And maybe you have some experience with this. What stopped me on that was there was no way to know who the artist was. So I couldn't get permission.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, but for personal use, I can just go ahead and chart it and stitch it, right? I mean, that's as long as I don't sell it.
Yeah, I think there's some controversy about that even.
Yeah.
But, you know, who's going to know if you have it in your house and, you know, your friends are going to see it, but nobody else will.
Right. Right. And now now it's 30 years old, so it's probably a moot point. But So that always slowed me down because that's a frustration I have is you see stuff. I have a picture. We stayed in a B&B or bed B&B or whatever they're called. And there was a picture on the wall of canoe paddles. Up and down, you know, half dozen or eight of them. And it was just really neat. And of course, it was done because it was different textures of wood and, you know, different aging on the paddles and stuff. So I took pictures of that, and I thought, you know, that would make a really great charted canvas design because you could take each of those paddles and do them in a different stitch.
Mm-hmm.
And what fun would that be?
That would be cool.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think that the name of the photographer was on there? No.
No.
So then what can you do? You know, because you think, all right, well, I'll design it because that would not be too tough to do. It's just paddles. You know, you just make one shape and repeat it. And so, all right, so what if somebody else wanted it? Then I really can't share it with them because I don't own the rights to that image.
Well, so I guess it would probably depend upon how closely you copied it. If you used it as inspiration and said, okay, this is a great idea. I like the way that they're arranged and the different sizes and colors and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just going to go off and use that as inspiration to design a project. And maybe yours has fewer paddles and, you know, maybe some of them go up and down, some of them go sideways, you know, what you've used it at. I mean, that's what everybody does, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, how many designers have you talked to that say, you know, they take photos of tiles,
yeah,
and fences and gates and architecture, and you know, so they're using what they observe in the world as inspiration for their designs.
Yeah.
So I think if you do that, then it's okay. But if you're going to copy it exactly, then it's not okay. But, you know, people will argue this, you know, just we've had this happen with some of our Needlework Embroiderers Guild members over time, you know, where, you know, some people think it's perfectly fine to take an image, a photograph or whatever, and turn it into a design or make copies of it. My mom got into an argument with somebody years and years and years ago over photographs, professional photographs. Mm-hmm. This woman thought she could just copy them and, you know, distribute them to everybody in the family. And mom is going, no, you can't do that. It's,
no.
You know, it's not your property. It's the photographer's property.
Right.
People don't understand that.
Right.
And they don't understand copyright these days or pay attention to it. You know, there's so much. And you know, that's always been something that I've paid attention to because I understand what designers go through. You know, I know how much work it is to come up with a design and to chart it and write the instructions. And yet, you know, somebody thinks that, oh, they can just take that and make copies of it because they bought it.
Yeah, I know.
And
no.
Distribute it to everybody. And they don't understand that they're taking away the designer's livelihood.
Right, right. Yeah, no,
yeah,
that's...
Yeah, that really bothers me.
Yeah, yeah, you can't do that. See, for me as a magazine editor, like, I know those copyright laws and what I can and can't do. And, you know, because I've done that a long time, I know what the rules are. But when it comes to art and interpreting it, to me, that immediately gets into a gray area. Because any designer who takes a photo or a sculpture and converts it to needlework, they get permission from the artist, written, full-blown, you know, this is, I'd like to convert this to needlework. And yeah, you better, because yeah, it's exactly. Yeah. And if they want money per piece, then you pay it if you want to do it. Yeah.
That's, right.
And that is the same. And that's the trouble with photography. I mean, that's just an, it's always been a problem, but it's even more so now that everybody has a camera. People just do not respect photographic rights. And
well, not only that, but with social media, you know, all of those, you get your digital images, you know, and the first thing you do is post them on Facebook for everybody to see. So I don't know how the professional photographers handle that.
Well, the ones that I've known, they chase them down. You know, you almost have to stay after it all the time.
Yeah.
And, and friends will, you know, because I've had some when I was doing aquarium photography and photos of coral. And people would use those photos, they would steal them and use them to sell coral. And no, you can't do that. You know, they'd crop my name off of it and use it. And so I would have friends, you know, write to me and say, hey, go here. I think this is your photo. And sure enough, and you have to chase them down. And you say, all right, if you're going to use this, here's the fee. Otherwise, you take it down and take it down immediately. And then you have to chase down their internet provider to make sure. And it's a lot of hassle.
And I imagine that a lot of people don't bother.
Right. Right.
And that's what the people that are using those images are kind of, if they even think about it, if they think about it at all, they're banking on the fact that it's a hassle to get it down.
Yep. Yeah. Well, look at how many people that we've had the painted pony designs.
Yeah.
You know, Debbie, she just went through absolute misery on Pinterest because I think it was Russian people were taking those painted canvases and converting them to cross stitch and selling them.
Mm-hmm.
And it took her forever, and I'm sure it cost her more money than she wanted to spend just to protect that. But, I mean, that's her gold. You know, that's her income.
Right.
And, yeah, it's – I really need – I should probably get somebody on, do a show who knows – it's that gray area. Like your mom was arguing with someone. Yeah. Those kinds of things you can argue forever. And unless a lawyer comes in who knows the boundaries, you never solve it.
And even then, you know, it's just like anything else. People have their opinion, and you're not going to change it.
No, you're not.
It doesn't matter how much you argue or, you know, what experts you bring in. They've formed their opinion, and they're just going to ignore you.
Yeah. And don't, you know, and another thing, if someone wants to buy the rights to your photo, sell them the rights to use it for an application. Don't sell them all the rights to your image.
Yeah.
Retain your rights, but sell the right to use it in this application and for promotional purposes for the application. But don't just sell them all the rights to your image, because now it's not yours anymore. And, you know, don't do that. No.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the podcasts I listen to is called 20,000 Hertz, and it's about sound. And they talk about lots of different things, but they had one of the podcasts that they did was on sampling of music.
Oh.
And this happens all the time.
Yeah.
And you know... So there's that copyright issue again. Yep. You know, if you take a drum solo, and there was one drum solo, I don't know if it was in the same podcast that they talked about it. There's one drum solo that everybody and their dog has used. And it's, you know, it's kind of a problem. If you take just a few beats or a few notes out of something, you know, is that a problem? Or if you take the whole... you know, the whole melody, is that a problem? Well, yeah. So, I mean, there's so many different areas of our lives that are constrained by some kind of copyright.
Right.
And yet, because we have the internet and all of the social medias, nobody pays any attention to it.
Right. Yep. And can get away with it because there's too much of it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. That the whole music industry, you know, that's an area, you know, anybody who knows the music industry will tell you, if you really want to make money, write songs.
Mm-hmm.
Performer, you know, don't be a performer, be a songwriter and sell those songs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're good at it, you will make much more money.
Right.
You know, and if you're a singer songwriter and do both, you know, that's just both ends of the stick. But yeah, the songwriters, that's where the money's made, because, you know, people do covers
right.
of it, people play it, whatever, and you get paid for all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be careful. You have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyway, that stopped me. So Karen Stoltz saved me having to deal with whether I can reproduce that bulletin cover. I'll just use hers, and I'm fine. So let's see,
and
what else?
Are you going to do it on? Are you going to do it on gauze?
I don't know. I've never done gauze. Have you ever done gauze?
No, I don't think so. But I don't think it's all that bad to work on.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem is that in a kit, is there gauze in the package?
No.
Okay. So if you're going to do it on gauze, don't make sure you get a big enough piece that you can mount it
mm-hmm.
onto stretcher bars, because it really needs to be mounted. And a lot of times in the kits, the piece that they give you really isn't big enough to do that. And, you know, be able to do the stitching comfortably.
Yeah.
This is what I have a friend who's done several pieces on silk gauze. And this is, we were just talking about not too long ago. And this is what she said, you know, that she's found with kits that have the gauze in them, they don't usually give you a very big piece.
Hmm. So then what, you have to attach some cloth on the sides to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, so I think one way that I've heard people do this is to use a mat board and cut a window in the mat board.
Oh.
Maybe tape, you know, use two pieces of mat board, one on each side, to give it some support.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a hassle because you got to cut the window in the mat board and you got to have the right size mat board. And blah. You know, if you can just tack it onto the stretcher bars, it's way easier.
Yeah, yeah. Because that stuff's pretty sturdy, isn't it?
Yes, it is very sturdy.
Yeah.
It's very tightly woven, even though it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't look tight. You know, the holes are big. I actually have a...
Yeah, I've only held one piece, and I didn't study it long enough to really appreciate it.
It's an interlock.
Oh, okay.
You know, so the threads aren't really going to go anywhere, but the holes are big. So I've got a piece here that's 40 count, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that my friend did for me, and she did, I think it's one, this is cross-stitch, but she did it on the gauze, and she used one strand of floss and just followed the pattern and cross-stitched it. And... So this is the pattern itself is probably, it's under 2 inches square, but the piece of gauze that she put it on is probably 5x7.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And she taped the edges and then she put it on stretcher bars to stitch it.
Just like you do a needle point canvas.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if it's interlocked, then yeah, that's very sturdy then.
Uh huh. I mean, it's very flexible, which is why you want it mounted on something.
Yeah.
And it has a nice smooth feel to it.
Well, that's not so bad, is it?
No.
That's not something to fear. Okay.
No.
Okay. Then I'm going to do the Linda Stoltz thing on gauze then. You just uh-huh. eliminated any fear I had right there.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yep. just get a big hunk of bees. Yeah, she, Linda doesn't include them, but she said now that Krynek has located a source, and so you can get Krynek has it, which I'm sure right. You have to get through access through commodities through your local needlework store. But anyway, there is there is an ongoing supply through Krynek of silk gauze. So yeah,
so I have one of her. I have the Eek strawberry, Halloween strawberry from a year or two ago. And I don't know if that has a piece of silk gauze in it or not, but that's, I will do that one on silk gauze when I get around to doing it.
Oh, okay.
Because I like the size. I like the smaller ones.
Yeah. Yeah. I love her strawberries. There's got to be somebody out there who's done every single one of them. There has to be.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet that person. I bet that's a collection and a half. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You have to have a lot of surface area to display them all.
No kidding. Yeah. 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 Because I think it's some 80. She gave me the number at one point, and I actually said it on a show, but I don't have it in front of me. I think it's some 85 or so strawberries, if you count all of them, or berries, not strawberries, but berries, if you count all of them, because she, you know, a lot of them were part of a berry in a pillow or something like that.
Right. Some of the patterns have multiple berries in them.
Right, right. But I think it's something like 85. But imagine that. Holy smokes. Wow.
I suppose you could put a hanger on them and hang them on like a tree.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I'd do is get like a tabletop branchy tree and then hang them on there. I think that would be pretty cool and change them out seasonally or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Of course, once you do the stitching, then you have to finish them.
I know. Yeah.
Although we have a really good finisher here in Eastern Iowa that, you know, I could probably finish the stuff, but I'd rather pay her to do it.
Yep. I'm with you. Yeah. There's people who are a lot better than I'll ever be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So let's see. So, all right. So back to the original question. What else did I buy? Oh, I bought, is it Owl's Wood Manor from
Karen Kluba? That's a cool pattern.
Oh, I knew that. I mean, even before I went to the Galleria show, I knew I was picking up a copy of that. Because that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
She's fun in that she's just a fantastic lady, but and a tremendous talent. But she's been doing a lot of smaller stuff lately, which I think is a huge plus because so much of her stuff is quite large. And, a lot of her newer stuff is smalls or smaller, 5x7, that kind of thing. And she's got a lot of nice, Halloween fall stuff. She had a nice little display of Halloween. I don't care for the Halloween stuff, but, Karen Kluba style Halloween looked really good. So,
I like those. I do like Halloween stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Now see fall. You give me fall stuff, you know, leaves and that kind of stuff. I like that, you know, cornucopia, pumpkins and gourds, that kind of thing I like. But, you know, the witches and the goblins and stuff, just, I don't know.
Yeah, I have I've gotten hands-on designs, some of her spooky things.
Mm-hmm.
I like those. And I have a series of, I don't have them all, but I've got several of the poison bottles that Kirk and Bradley has designed for Needlepoint.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that I think is fun. And I did like some of those things that Autumn, what's the name of that? Autumn Lane.
Oh, yes, yes.
The male designer. The one that said he could design faster than his wife could stitch.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
They have some cool stuff.
Yep. Yeah, he had, I'm going to try and do a show with him. He said he'd do one. But yeah, he had some really interesting Halloween things that were a very different approach. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of more inclined towards the pumpkin end of Halloween too.
Okay.
I'm not really, really deep into the pure Halloween stuff, except for some things. There's some things I like, but I do like pumpkins, and I've got some pumpkin painted canvases and a whole bunch of cross stitch charts that have pumpkins and gourds and stuff on them. I like the colors.
Yeah. See. Okay. That's what appeals to me, and that's why it's fall for me, but not Halloween, because I like those golden yellow and orange and brown, those combinations I think are really appealing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, that's usually I'll tend toward blue, but that whole palette is visually very appealing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I agree.
Yeah, Autumn Lane. Yeah, he was great. He has some really nice stuff. That was funny. I can design faster as you can stitch. I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
Why not?
Right.
Yeah, that was he was fun. That was a new one for me. There were a handful of new people there, new to me anyway, at the Galleria. That's a fun part of. Because you know you think you've seen and heard from everybody, and then you go to one of those events. No, you haven't.
Well, and especially if you don't have a local needlework store.
Yeah.
Because that's where you usually see those things because they bring stuff in after market or throughout the year. But if you don't have one, then you don't see the new designers.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially in cross stitch, there are a lot of new designers these days. A lot of people trying it, do a couple of designs and they take off. And there's a lot of talent out there, and everybody has a different look, a different approach. So So the Galleria, way back to the original thing. I really enjoyed that. It was fun. Yeah. A good one. Hope to go back next year and do more. Of course, hope to go back. It was 20 miles down the road. That was perfect.
Yeah. You didn't have to worry about getting a room or anything.
No, it was perfect. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing, because now coming up here at the end of October will be the first trip for the magazine, paying job, in 2 years. And the thought of just getting on a plane and starting to go to conferences and symposia again just makes my head scream.
Yeah,
this one's in St. Louis. I caught a break just down the road again. Yep, no
That's
airplane
great.
For me. Yeah. So anyway, that was good. Holy smokes! Yeah, we need to wrap up. No stitch hour on October 20. Because, as I've said before, we'll be on a plane going home. So there will not be one on the 20th. There should be a podcast that day, but not a stitch hour. And next Wednesday, be sure and join us, because Deb DeCrane is going to be our guest. And she's going to do some lacing on one of Beth Ellicott's pieces.
I'm looking forward to that. I have seen it done, but it's been quite a long time ago.
Have you ever tried it?
No.
Yeah. Me neither.
Yeah.
It doesn't look tough. It looks like fiddly.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of along the line of lacing a piece onto a piece of cardstock, or mat board. You have to... You get your stitches in, and then you have fiddle with it to make sure it's straight and even and tight, and maybe not quite as bad as lacing, but
yeah. Because somebody once told me that if you can lace your piece, say you're having it custom framed, if you can lace your piece, the cost of the custom framing will drop significantly because you eliminate all the labor for the framer.
Mm-hmm.
They just have to cut a frame, drop it in, put put the glass in, so it becomes pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
So, which says to me that's a good skill to have. If you're cranking out a lot of needlework that you want framed, then beneficial to learn how to lace.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of framers don't lace anymore. They use stainless steel pins.
Oh.
In foam core, which, you know, is fine with me. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what framers have been doing for needlework for quite a while.
Yeah.
There's not that many framers that know how to lace. And the pinning is, I mean, that's still pretty fiddly, you know, obviously, to get things straight and taut. But I think it's probably quicker than lacing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, if you know how to do it and are good at it, you're right. You can save yourself quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
And so in a case like that, you could go anywhere. You could go to Hobby Lobby or Michael's or any place that had the kinds of frames that you wanted. If you're going to let the framer do it, then you have to find a framer that knows how to mount needlework.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that can be hard to do.
And then that's when you start to pay. Yeah.
That's when you start to pay. Right.
Because, yeah, for me, if I'm going to frame a piece of needlework, I want it as archival as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I the ones I have been laced, and I guess I prefer that. I don't have any that I've had done that were pinned. But, yeah, pinning gets used a lot. Well, even, I mean, that's as old as antique samplers, because how many samplers have you seen that have been pulled out of a frame and all the edges are the nail holes, you know, from nailing
right
onto wood. Yeah, that's...
So, interestingly, talking about archival, my mom was digging through her closets and found a piece that I did for her back in the 80s that is iris. It's wool on linen, and it's shaded, wool shading. Mm-hmm. I guess. Long and short stitch. So she decided she wanted to hang it. And I got to looking at it and I said, no, we need to, you know, the frame is dinged and the mat is marred and the edge of the mat, you know, where it was beveled has turned yellow.
Ooh.
And so I took it to the framer and we took it apart and... So she would have had this framed. She had it framed. I didn't have it framed in the 80s by a framer who, quote unquote, knew what they were doing for the time. It was stapled onto like a 12-ply mat board.
Oh, no.
With great big, huge staples.
Oh, no.
And nothing was acid free.
Oh.
And I was talking to him, and he said, yeah, he used to work at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, and they have a lot of artwork in the building. And, you know, even years ago, he could see that the mats were changing color because they weren't acid-free. So anything that you've had framed for a long time, chances are good, it doesn't have acid-free mats.
Mm-hmm.
So we took it all apart, and when we got it out, I could see that it was pretty dirty, which didn't surprise me because it didn't have glass on it.
Yeah.
And my stepfather smoked.
Oh.
So I brought it home, and I soaked it for probably 6 weeks, changing the water frequently. And I don't know that I got everything out of it, but finally I said, I'm done. You know, it's clean enough. And we reframed it, and it looks, you know, it looks fine now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought they were rust stains, but, they weren't anywhere near close to the staples. I think it was foxing, like you see on paper.
Mm-hmm.
as the acid builds up.
Yeah.
And that did come out.
Oh, okay.
So I was happy about that. And I didn't have to. I just put it in water with a little bit of dish soap.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Or Orvis. I think I used Orvis most of the time that quilters use. Just a little tiny bit and swish it around, you know, and let it sit there for a while. And then rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
Multiple times. So, yeah, then I started looking around at some of the stuff I've had framed for a while. And I think I've got one or two pieces that, you know, judging by the core, the way that the bevel looks on the matting, I probably need to have them rematted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's where the inner material gets exposed. And yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's technologies change.
Right.
You know, it wasn't that they were doing anything wrong, you know, 30, 40 years ago. That's what the standard was.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, you don't fault them. Yeah, these days we just have a better appreciation for what mm-hmm. paper with acid in it does over time. And,
right.
And we have more access to it. Where I, you know, that it probably back in that time was more museums and nobody else kind of thing, and
maybe,
yeah, no, it's
maybe you know they may not have even really paid that much attention to it.
Right, right, yeah. Well, and that's the I think that's one of the interesting questions about having needlework finished, however you finish it, is a lot of that stuff we don't think of as heirloom long term.
Right.
So it's, you know, finish it. It'll look good for a few years, and if I might keep it, I may not. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, so it raised, for me at least, it raises the question, where do you draw the line? Or do you just say, wait a minute, I don't know. Maybe I should have everything archivally finished in case somewhere down the right line somebody wants to keep it. I don't know.
Right.
But there's got to be there's a lot of needlework where it's just not worth the expense.
Right.
Just quick and dirty stuff for holidays and things that you're just going to put out. And a mm-hmm. few years from now, you don't really want to feel bad about throwing it out. Just,
yeah.
Yeah, just pitch it. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So then as you're working with that piece that you did long ago, did you want to fix stitching, or were you pretty happy with it?
So I was pretty happy with it. The one thing that I would have done if I were doing it again now would be to outline the edges, because I didn't know. Nobody taught me how to do this. I mean, I learned how to, my mom taught me how to do surface embroidery when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, elevated that to the crewel embroidery when I got older, and nobody really told me that you should cover the lines. So I have quite a few pieces. A lot of it I gave away, but I still have a few pieces that the stitching is beautiful, but I didn't cover the line entirely. I brought my needle up in the line.
Oh.
So you can see some of it. So on the iris, it's not as bad as some of the other pieces that I have. But, you know, until I saw, I think probably Mary Corbett do it, you know, where she outlines a piece before she does the shading, the mm-hmm. long and short, or satin stitch, you know, with just a little back stitch or a stem stitch or something like that, you know, to have something for the needle to come over, the thread to come over,
right,
to raise that edge just a little bit. But it, I mean, I'm sure that's part of it, that the whole idea is for the effect, the way that it looks, but it also serves to cover that line where you would stitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of, because, you know, really I probably would be concerned about losing the line if I were trying to stitch on the outside of it, you know, because if you're, you know, if
right.
you go a little bit too far, or, you know, then you lose your smooth line.
Right. Yeah.
So that was probably what I was, the way that I was thinking of it. And of course on those kinds of stamped kits, those lines don't wash out.
No.
They're permanent, you know, they're on there forever. So that would be the one thing, you know, if I were doing it now, that is what I would do.
I would
cover those lines and stitch along the outside of that stem stitch or back stitch or whatever.
Yeah. That question came to mind because I have a piece. I'm sure it was not a hand painted needlepoint piece. That's a P with some grapes and stuff that mm-hmm. I don't even know how long ago I did, and French knots for the grapes and mm-hmm. the whole bit, and it hangs. It's always hung in the house somewhere, but never where I see it. And now in the new house, Marga hung it in a place where I sit at the dining room table. I see it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the pea and the grapes and the vines and all that stuff that intertwine the pea, all that's fine, but it's an ecru basket weave background. Not so good. Not so good.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see where I finished off my threads. You bet you can. So it's starting to bug me a little bit. Like, I'm not sure I want to look at that all the time.
Yeah. But you don't want to. You don't want to take it apart and redo it.
Oh no.
Or do it again, or just. You know, put it somewhere in a hallway where.
yeah, I need to finish something else and say, Margaret, let's put this up there, and then we'll move the other. Because it was one of those.
Bedroom or...
Yeah, in a corner in the dark in the basement. Yeah, because it was one of those where it was a real challenge because I used different stitches, but then the grapes. I think it was one of the first times I'd done any amount of French knotting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember struggling with it and pulling them out several times. And actually, when I look at them, I did, you know, pretty respectable job. So, mm-hmm. you know, I feel pretty good about that. But, yeah, the field of basket weaved ecru wool. And this was wool, all wool. It's just,
mm-hmm.
no. But I had one. I'd forgotten about it. We were at some family gathering, and my younger sister, and I don't know if they've been married 30 years, something like that. But so, anyway, it was a family gathering and needlework came up, and mainly because people could look at me and say, you know, what's wrong with you? But
yeah, right.
you know, whatever. But Nancy, she says, oh, I have one that you did. And she went and got it. And it was an embroidery, I think it was Cruel. Embroidery heart, wedding heart, you know, with their names and the date and mm-hmm. everything and all the flowery things around the heart. And she brought it out. And when she was coming out of the house, I'd completely forgotten I did it. I didn't even remember, you know, didn't mm-hmm. remember anything about it. When she's coming out, I thought, oh, this is going to be a disaster. This is going to just look awful. And to my surprise, no, I thought, wow, I did okay on this thing. Yeah, there's a couple places here where I'd redo it because it's a little sloppy, but geez, I did okay. You know, what got into me? And she still mm-hmm. keeps it. I mean, it means a lot to her. So, you know, bravo for that. But
yeah,
I just wonder, but yeah, the basket weaving. No, I would do a much better job these days. And I hate basket weaving, but, I know how to do it right, too.
I think that's something that trips a lot of people up, and they don't know any different.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they're in the guild or, you know, or one of the guilds or are looking at stuff on one of the needlepoint Facebook pages, you know, you start to get that. You get the idea that it shouldn't have ridges in it. And, you know, there's reasons that happens. And and you start to figure out that, oh, you know, it shouldn't look that way.
Yeah.
And learn how to do it correctly.
Yeah. And that's not so easy.
I don't think I have anything that I did a large field of basket weave on before I really knew how to do it.
Okay. So you don't have what I'm looking at. Okay.
I don't have that. No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can. And of course, the fact that it's ecru doesn't help a lick. You know, it's Yeah. Just, well. That's all right. The rest of it worked, so I'm good.
Yeah.
All right. We need to wrap up here. Sunday. Okay, so tonight, join us, Gene Lee at the Attic, looking at samplers. The 17th now, 2 o'clock Eastern time, we'll be shopping at the Attic. And then Sunday, speaking of all the Halloween, Lindsay Swearingen is our guest Sunday, and she has a new book called Creepy Cross Stitch, 25 Spooky Projects. And
no fun.
Yeah, like I said, Halloween is not my thing, but I have to say, her 25 projects, if you're into Halloween, are very nicely done. So we'll talk to her about her stitching and her new book, and I'm sure that's available. From all the usual outlets. But yeah, she does a real nice job. She has some really nice projects in there for those who are into the ghosts and goblins and witches and things. Yeah. All right, Cindy, that's it.
Okay, Gary.
Thanks to everybody for listening.